This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Knowing is Knowing. I'm your host, Shai Young, and as always, I appreciate you all tuning in to a brand new episode. This episode, this week, I have a phenomenal guest, no pun intended, a good friend of mine, Philip Robinson, who is a speaker, an author, a producer with ESPN+, a digital marketer, connoisseur, a coach, a teacher. He does it all, and I'm so grateful to bring this conversation with you all. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite audio platform, and also give my guy a follow. Check out his content, and if you're looking for more coaching or more advice on how to do anything and everything, make sure to check out his page. It'll be in the description. Till next time, peace.
You're in a place where I would like to be. You've got into the TED Talk space. So a little bit about me, a counselor and trainer, but I've written 2 books. I've seen you've written 4 books. I've seen you have had a TED Talk. I see you currently work with ESPN. Are you done some things with ESPN?
I've done some producing for ESPN+. This is my first year that I actually haven't done it, but I did it for the previous 6 years.
Yeah, man, I think that's super cool, man. So for those who don't know who you are, mm-hmm. I'd love to get your story out there, man. Who are you to the world?
Man, I appreciate that. I would say that at the end of the day, I've been trying to figure out what is this like one word that I always like to tell people who I am. I'm starting to come together with a producer. I'm just a producer of all different sorts. Like you said, I've had the opportunity to write a couple books and co-author one. Had the opportunity to do a couple albums as well. So 2 lo-fi albums, 1 motivational album. I have a second motivational album loading. Had ESPN+, as you were just saying, for 6 years. For the past 14 years, I've been in television production. So now I'm still doing stuff with the ACC network. I actually had broadcast with them last night with Duke University. And
I saw that.
Then again, tomorrow night with Duke with the men's soccer tournament. So just so much. And the main focus now that I'm trying to push is focusing on speaking, like professional speaking engagements, just traveling the country while also teaching people how to not only be intentional with their personal brand, but leverage their personal brand so they can continuously land opportunities, whether that's within entrepreneurship, corporate, or a freelancer.
Oh, wow, man. I got to ask, how did we get here? Like, what got you to the space of wanting to do all these things? Is this something you knew when you were a kid? Is it just an opportunity that kind of fell into your lap? Or tell me a little more about that.
Definitely not anything I wanted to do when I was a kid. I wanted to be an engineer. I love building stuff and putting stuff together. I started taking math classes, or like college math classes in high school. I said, yeah, nah, this ain't it. This isn't it. But I was I've been in television in the industry ever since I was 14. So that's how I ended up there. An internship came to my class and asked the class. So like, hey, would anybody be interested in doing an internship for, it was the Durham Bulls, or is the Durham Bulls, because they still do it. Working with the television crew. I didn't care anything about baseball. I didn't care anything about television because, like I said, I wanted to be within, an engineer, the engineering field. But at the end of it, they say, you know what? We'll offer you free food every single game. I said, you know what? I don't care nothing about what you're saying. But you said free food every single game, I'm there. So I applied for the internship, got it, ended up loving it. And the rest is history. I've been in television production, specifically sports, ever since then. Then while I was in college, I ended up running cross country and track. And so while I was doing that, I had the opportunity to get a chance to expand a little bit more because I ended up fracturing my leg during one of our championship races. And so I wanted to be able to get back to the university or the team still. And that was through all the production skills that I had learned while I was, you know, eating up everybody's food over the summer at the minor league baseball team. So the university saw all the talents that I had when I was doing that. And then when I graduated, the MEAC, the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference, decided to start streaming all the sports for football season on ESPN+. So because of everything that I had done previously and they knew of my experience, the university and the people within the athletic department asked me if I would want to be the producer for those shows moving forward. So, of course, I say yes. I wasn't going to turn that down. So that's how I ended up with everything with ESPN+. Really enjoyed the about 6 years I was doing that. Then while I was still within the TV industry, I was working for a news station, and I was working myself to the ground, to be honest with you. It was a lot of long hours. It was 2 a.m. to 10 a.m. at the news station. I would turn around and I would be at the minor league baseball team for about 11 a.m. until the games end. So that could be anywhere like 8 p.m., 9 p.m. So I started to fall asleep at work, falling asleep in the closet. Like, it was ridiculous. So I wanted to figure out how to make money online. And so that's how I really dove into digital marketing. And with digital marketing, I learned more about personal branding. And so I just continued to learn more and more about that. I started doing some drop shipping and I just stuck with it. So that's how I got into digital marketing, personal branding, all of that. Now I'm even a college instructor to be able to teach others how to work on their digital marketing skills. So that's how I got here, in short.
Wow. Well, that's one, that's really cool, man. I have a couple of questions that kind of come into my mind. That seemed very seamless, like even in a sense of the adversity. How did you deal with those adversities from athletics not working out to transitioning over to production, even those long nights? Like, how did you continue to stay persistent in that process?
Man, that's a good question. It was always a reminder, or me having to remind myself, that I can still get a goal accomplished even though the initial route or the plan didn't work out. So say, for example, when I ended up fracturing my leg, I really had a goal to be able to make it to the championships for the indoor track season. And so I was like, well, obviously I'm not going to get there by running. So how am I going to, you know, get to this championship, whether I had to start coaching some of the athletes, whether I got to, you know, be a trainer, or like, I don't know what, but how can I do it? And so I realized I had to leverage some skills. So that was a really pivotal moment for me because it taught me so much. It taught me that you can always still accomplish your goals, even though your initial plan doesn't work out. And you have so many skills already within you that you can leverage to get to where you want to go. So once I went through that entire process and was able to be successful with it, and I don't even mention this, they offered me like free grad, like a full ride scholarship for grad school also because of everything I was doing. So I was like, man, so much came from this. I understood that I am very talented and I can accomplish anything. So any other challenge I was faced with as time progressed, I just understood that my initial plan may not work out, but I had the abilities and capabilities to just overcome any type of mental block. So it was really that pivot from everything when I fractured my leg that has allowed me to continuously push forward.
That is really cool, man. The sort of stories you hear, and it seems like a movie in a sense. Just because I know that one, producing is already a very interesting space as it is. It can be very competitive. You know, it's just tough to get in those places, and to get to the space that you got into it, and to even work in the space of ESPN, man. I know that's usually like a person's dream in that space, I would assume.
Yeah.
But let's transition over to the digital marketing piece, because I'm curious.
All right.
Is it really that easy? If that makes sense. Like, you know, when I see certain things online and people are like, I do great in digital marketing, I made all this money, I might be like, is it really that easy?
Nah, it's not. So I've been seeing this grow on social media a lot recently. People are like, oh yeah, I just started digital marketing. I'm doing X. I'm like, man, you're lying. Like, either you're lying, you're scamming or something.
Yeah.
Digital marketing is a whole field, right? It's a whole, like, people go to school for this. That's why I'm teaching it. It's not something that a person is going to pick up overnight and instantly become good at. One thing I want people to understand when it comes to digital marketing is that it's a large range of skills that a person may have. And this is something. This is how I know that most people, that when they're posting about it and they're talking about how all the money that they make, they never mention anything very specific about what they do in digital marketing. For example, you had SEO, like search engine optimization. So how well are you able to pop up on Google? How are you able to pop up with your YouTube videos on Google, with TikTok? Do they even realize that TikTok is the number one search engine over Google right now? How good are they with paid advertisement? Do you even have a certification for anything? Have you ever taken a test? Like, do you know how to write a headline? Do you know how many characters are allowed within a meta title? The list just continues to go on. I never see any of this information spoken about within, you know, these posts on social media. People are like, yeah, I'm a digital marketer. I learned this. And you cannot learn all that information in 30 days and 60 days a year. Like, you have to grow at it. And even then, digital marketing is forever changing. So
at Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Something that you may have learned 6 months ago has already changed, and you already had to update your industry knowledge in order to stay ahead of the curve. So that's just my two cents on it. I wouldn't believe, I would say like 95% of the people that say that they started making all this money off digital marketing, they may be white labeling it also. Like, they may be white labeling a course that they bought and then selling it.
What does white labeling mean, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, of course. So white labeling basically means that you can purchase a product or service from someone that has already built out the service or the product, and then you just stick your name, your branding on it, and you sell it as if you create it from scratch.
Oh, so you're kind of like the middleman, but you already bought you. Okay, I got you. Is that something that will be correlated with drop shipping too, or is that just something that's completely different? Like, I know drop shipping kind of.
It's funny that you say that. This jacket is actually drop ship. Like, so it's similar to drop shipping. Yeah. So in the way of, this is, I think, a Champion bracket, a jacket. However, I just put my own brand on it, and I actually sold this on my website at one point. So very similar. Yeah.
So like drop shipping would be like Alibaba, for like a website like that, or like a Shopify.
So Shopify would be the host of your e-commerce store, and you don't have to just use Shopify. I started off with Shopify, but then like now I have Wix as my domain host for the store. When it comes to where you're getting the products from, it can vary. So yes, Alibaba can be one place. Alibaba allows you to buy it in bulk. So you may actually buy it in bulk and then send it to a warehouse. That's what a lot of people do for Amazon FBA. AliExpress allows you to drop ship directly from their website. But then other places like Printify or Printful, but Printful just got purchased by Printify maybe about a week or so ago, allowed you to do clothing with your own branding.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, that's, both those spaces are interesting to me, because there's a lot of information. And then I always look at some things kind of like, what is real?
Yeah.
It's not real. Because again, you're seeing a video of saying I made X amount of money and I know how content works. You can edit it, you can change it, you know, and they have, you know, I get it. I respect the hustle. It's just kind of like, you know, I know it's a lot more to it. And I am a little bit curious because you are in that space. If you don't mind answering, has either of those spaces been affected by AI? And how that's been? Sure. And what does that look
like? Which space are you referring to?
I'll start with digital marketing first. Like, has AI affected digital marketing in any sense? Has it made it easier? Has it made it more difficult?
It has definitely, I would say it's made it easier. But you also had to remember to humanize everything that you're doing. So it makes it, I'll go on the aspect of like being a copywriter, right? So within digital marketing, you have people that focus solely on copywriting, making sure that a description is written out really well. The emails that you are maybe receiving are well written, your hooks, maybe within a caption. There's so many different parts of copywriting. And with writing, even like the most basic caption or an email or a blog post, whatever it is, it takes creativity, and every single thing that you write may not come to you easily the first time. As a person that's written two books yourself, I'm pretty sure that you will understand that sometimes as you get writer's block. And so
100%.
The copywriting, like AI, helps you almost like jumpstart your creativity. And you can start to, you know, reform it, reframe it, whatever you're doing. Put your own tone, your own attitude, whatever, your spice on it, and it helps you in that way. Now, there are a lot of people that will just sit here and they take copy of the output that AI gives them and just post it. And you should never do that. Of course, that's always what I tell my students. Like, I can tell that you sent me this email straight from ChatGPT and you didn't even edit it yourself. So
yeah,
it has made it easier, because whenever a person does get writer's block or create a creativity block, because you can use it to, of course, generate images or videos, or even like videos of yourself. I've done that before. So it makes that process easier. The only hard part is making sure that you are not posting something that looks like AI, because that can break down the trust between you and your audience. And if you are making, like, if it's obvious that it's AI, like, make sure that it's known that people are supposed to know that this is AI.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. I'm always a big advocate of AI, but I tell people all the time, you have to humanize it as much as you can, because if you don't, again, like you mentioned, the trust is gone. And I think from a writing standpoint, at least for me, I've always taken the credit and pride and feel like I've put my entire all into something. Like, I know I could write a book in a matter of a day just using AI, but a part of me would feel empty knowing that I didn't really put my own spin to it. So I definitely get that. Speaking of books, you've written four, you co-written one and wrote four. How do we get there? What are your books about? What are things that you talk about?
Yeah, so the first book is called Be Phenomenal, Be Forgotten, Taking Your Life to the Next Level. And that was a very spontaneous book. I actually wrote that while we were on the road for a track, when I was doing all the production and helping them out with the interviews. I remember I was riding on the bus in the hotel that night. I wrote it within 48 hours. It was ended up being like an ebook. It was like 48 pages or something like that.
Oh, okay.
And the idea from that came from, like, I wanted to be able to release something on my birthday. People always support you the most on your birthday. So why not release a product or a service around that time? Because that's when they're going to pay attention the most. And my birthday was coming up, and I want to say like 21 days or no. It was 14 days. 14 days it was coming up. So I was like, I got to get this written. So I did it within those 2 days. And then from there, I had my fiance, girlfriend at the time, and my best friend also help me edit it. They tore it to shreds. That's when I found out that I was not a great writer. That's when I found out. But you know what? The storytelling behind it was, and the information that was told was all that mattered. Got that out, ended up seeing the response from everybody that read it. They really enjoyed it, had a lot of good takeaways. So I was like, okay, maybe I can do this again.
Yeah.
And I eventually ended up starting a podcast, and I wanted to be able to get more eyes on the podcast. Podcast, flip it around. I ended up writing another book. I don't remember why I wrote that second book. The podcast was based on the book, so I'm not even gonna lie to you. I don't remember why I wrote that second book. I think it was just a side quest. I do a lot of those. I'm sorry, I don't have an answer for that one. The co-author book. I had someone reach out to me about it, and the name of the book is Athletes to Entrepreneurs, Volume 2. I'm just getting together a whole bunch of athletes and talk about their transition from being an athlete to becoming an entrepreneur, because it's very tough for a lot of athletes to make a transition to the just the working force, because you were focusing on being an athlete for so long. So that's what that co-author book was about. And then my most recent ebook is called Ignore the Fluff. I actually have it for free on my website on phenomspeaks.com. And that book is just about figuring out what it is that you need to focus on to accomplish your goals. And there's a fun little quiz in there, a test that I would say that I always love to see if people are able to pass it or not. But that's how those four books came about. Well, three, because I don't remember how I ended up writing one of them.
No, that makes sense.
It is.
No, that's how it is sometimes. Ironically enough, we have a very similar trajectory with the first one.
Really?
My first one is actually titled Be Formless. And I wrote that when I got out of college in 2017. I was back in my parents' house, didn't know what to do. I was dealing with some anxiety and depression, just trying to figure out my life. And was a terrible writer, by the way. It wasn't like it originally started off as an outlet, and like 150 pages later, I put together something, and it was a great moment for me. And my second one I just released this past December is called Renew. It's about finding yourself again, and I kind of went through a very interesting time in my life and felt like it was a fresh start. And I always kind of feel like I'm in these fresh starts. So that's really cool, man. I think it's appreciate you, man. I always think it's really cool to see people doing very similar things, and also just being honest with that. You know, you could have came on here and said, "Oh yeah, I've been writing since I was 6 years old," and I knew.
Hated the story times and language arts. So, what would you say was the most difficult part for the writing process for you?
Myself. I think that's really good. I know myself. I'm my worst critic. If somebody edits my stuff and say, "Oh, this is trash," I probably already thought that already, anyways.
Yeah, all right, that's cool. You know.
Yeah. I think sometimes it was a little bit of my own insecurities, I would say, because I'm very open and reflective in my stuff, but I always want to make it portrayed in as truthful as I can, while also considering the reader. Like, it was, I would write it a couple times, and I'm like, well, this seems more like a journal for myself. Like, how do I get this to be for somebody else to read and digest it? And so the second one, I was a lot shorter. Like your first one, I think it was maybe 55, 60 pages. Mm-hmm. Like, I know most people don't read. not for long periods of time.
Yeah. Or they don't finish it.
Right. And one of my favorite books is, I have a couple. One of my favorite books of all time is The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. And that was very much a quick read. The Alchemist, Seven Spiritual Laws to Success. Like, I think books that have,
I had a couple of those behind me.
Yeah, I know. I see Day Trader for Attention. I see Day Trader for Attention. I think that's a Gary V book. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, we very much on the same spectrum, man. So yeah, I read a lot of books during those times, man. So speaking of books, since we're here and we mentioned a couple, what are some of your personal favorite books that you like to read or you found inspiration from?
I would say Crushing It by Gary V. Probably a really great one for me to get everything started. The next one, it's a Grant Cardone book, and I typically can roll it off the tip of my tongue.
10X?
Yes. The book that I really like is actually not back here. I do have the 10X rule right here. Funny.
10X rule. Did he write another one? I'm trying to remember.
He has a lot of books. Oh, here it is. Oh, I took off the cover of it, but it's Be Obsessed or Be Average.
Oh, yeah. Be Obsessed, Be Average. Okay.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that book. And then another book I would say that I always enjoy, that I can always go back to, is The 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth. by John C. Maxwell.
Yep. John C. Maxwell, one of the GOATs. Yes.
Listen, all these right here, all them.
One of, if not the GOAT in leadership, one of them for sure. So
yeah.
since we on this topic, man, I think this is great. So I have two questions for you. The first question is, what do you think drives you to want to be successful? Do you feel like you're there? How do you balance that space of always trying to progress and be better?
Yeah. So I do feel as if I'm there. I say that I'm there in terms of like I'm successful because the life that I'm living right now is something that I wrote down in a journal 4 months ago. Not 4 months ago, excuse me, 4 years ago, that one.
I was about to say.
That's a quick turnaround. Like 4 or 5 years ago. And
okay.
One thing that I actually like to ask people at the end of my podcast episodes is, what was success to you 10 years ago and what is success to you now? And so I realized that I am living in that version of success. It may not be how I 100% envisioned it, but it is that. And so I recognize that now. And understanding that this is what I really dreamed of and manifested 4 or 5 years ago, that is success to me. Also understanding that I'm able to help people every single week, specifically right now, college students get their jobs and internships within the digital marketing field, right? Not sitting here having my student be like, yeah, I'm over here making six figures from digital marketing. I just learned it 2 weeks ago from Philip. Nah. They're out here getting jobs. Enjoy teaching them. I'm loving teaching people about personal branding, how they can be more intentional with it. And I'm seeing people get opportunities from personal branding. So being able to help people as well makes me just understand that I am successful at the moment. For me, in the beginning, success was like, oh, yeah, I want to make sure that I have, $1 million in bank account. That was what I thought success was because, you know, that's what media portrays it as. But as I continue to mature and grow, I'm like, you know what, it's a lot of how at peace am I right now in life? How healthy am I? How many people am I able to help? And how much am I able to spend my time how I want to?
Yeah, that's beautiful, man. That's a great response, great answer. I truly do believe that the service is the highest point of success when you're able to kind of serve, especially in something that you enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. That you actually get a real thrill and kick out of, man. So I think that's really beautiful, and it's very commendable, especially with college kids, man, because I think that this generation, that age, is very in a very uncertain space because their lives look completely different. You know, maybe 20, mm-hmm. 30 years ago, a college degree is everything. Nowadays, a bachelor's degree is pretty much a high school degree, and these kids are getting into these spaces now where they have to continue to find a place and a way, and nobody's willing to help them out. Like, that's the thing that really, that's always been my driving force. That's also really bothers me sometimes in the creative space is we don't collaborate enough because we try to get something out of it. And I guess there's a sense of doing that. But for me, it's always just trying to build a genuine connection, especially if somebody's doing great. Why would I not continue to try to shine light on them? Even if I don't get anything because of that, it's just, be a part of that journey, I think, is really, really important. So I appreciate you doing that, man. I think that's good. I gotta ask.
About TEDx?
I gotta ask about the TEDx, man. if I would have, in a phrase and get this, when you reached out, like anybody else, I start looking at your page, studying stuff. I saw TEDx. I'm like, we talking about the same TED that,
yeah,
I think everybody wants to do a TED Talk at some point. What everybody imagines themselves getting a TED Talk.
Yeah.
How did that happen? And what was that experience?
It was another side quest. My life is full of side quests. I'm not going to hold you. So I don't recall what really sparked me wanting to do one. I truly think it was just a matter of one day I was like, I'm going to do a TEDx Talk. Like, I don't know. I just woke up one day. I was like, I'm going to do one. I was like, all right, cool. I'm going to manifest it. So I made it my screensaver on my phone, a TEDx stage. I'm big in manifestation, like the journaling. I even right now, my current manifestation on the Let Me Clear All My Notifications is top 100 upcoming speakers list, and it's just a Time magazine.
Wow.
So that's kind of my current manifestation. But yeah, so I manifested it with my wallpaper on my phone, and I did quick research on how to be able to be a TEDx speaker. Found out that it's 95% of people have to submit an application. Very, very small amount of people actually just get asked if they want to do a TEDx talk. So I was like, all right, cool. About majority of people that are on this stage have to submit an application. I have to figure that out. So this is game for you and everybody else that wants to be able to do a TEDx talk. It's actually very simple. One, make sure you know what you want your topic to be about. And then make sure it's also not a motivational talk. It can't be. No, I'm serious. Like, that's actually in the guidelines of TEDx.
Yeah.
TEDx and TED. Those are also two different things. TED and TEDx are two different things for a lot of people.
I'm assuming TED's the bigger platform.
Correct.
And TEDx is like at small colleges and.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. But everything still, like, let's just say you do a TEDx talk, it still gets posted on.
Yeah, it still
gets. Can get posted on the TED website. So mine is actually on the TED website and the YouTube channel as well. So it varies, but it's all the same organization. So. Make sure you know what your topic is. And once you understand what your topic is, go to Google and put in a Google alert for TEDx application. That's it. TEDx application or open TEDx application, call for TEDx speakers. Each individual organization is going to have different wording for the way that they have their applications. So you'll start to get these Google alerts for whenever these applications are opening up on the web. Once you see it, submit your application ASAP. Sometimes it will be a simple written application of what you're looking to do, 200 words, 300 words of what your talk is, the idea. Make sure it aligns with the theme. This is how you have a higher chance of getting interviewed for a TEDx talk. Make sure that the ideas/talk that you want to give aligns with the theme of the event for that year. They change every single year for the specific event. And from there, you'll go through an interview process. They'll probably ask you to record a video of yourself speaking. They'll probably also get on an actual call with you to just learn a little bit more information about you. So it can range anywhere between like two to three to four steps of the interview process, almost like a job. And then hopefully, you know, you'll end up getting it and they'll let you know about next steps for how to be to get the TEDx talk. So I went through this exact same process and I landed two within 24 hours of each other. I was going out here on the web, just like submitting applications or shooting my shot with themes that aligned with my talk. One day I got an email, I think it was like a Friday. I got an email saying like, hey, we saw your application. And this was like a month or two after I submitted everything. So hey, we really want to have you come speak, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, yes, of course. This one was actually virtual. And then the next day I get an email or like the next morning, I submitted the same talk idea. And they were like, hey, we also want to have you. This one was for Houston in Houston, Texas, and Elise specifically. And so I was like, yeah, I'm going to that one. So that one was in person. First time I actually got a chance to speak on stage, I was very nervous about it. But
I'm about to ask you about that. Like, how much time did they give you? Like 10 minutes?
So TEDx talks are allowed to be up to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I think that's the max time that you should do. Not even should do. I think it's like within the guidelines on the website. I think the bare minimum was like 7 minutes. And I think I did like 8 minutes and 30 seconds for both of them. I went for like the bare minimum to get in and out. I did. And here's the thing. Now I think I could easily do like a 10 to 15 minute talk. But then since I was so new in the speaking space, that eight and a half minutes felt like an hour.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. I was like, oh my gosh, take me off the stage.
I know it did. I'm sure. How many people, if you could recall, how many people were probably there in that space?
Yeah. One second. Do you remember how many people would you say were at the TEDx talk in Alif? It was dark for me. So when I looked at the audience, I couldn't really tell. And it was also
COVID. Oh, okay.
40, 50 people out in the audience.
Okay. But that's even in that space, though, because when you see TED Talk videos, you just see the speaker and then you see a dark space and it feels like it's so many people there. Yeah. Even though 40, 50 people is still a lot of people, right? The people.
It felt like it. And then, like I was also saying, it was like COVID had just, well, not COVID, lockdown had just ended. Yeah, quarantine had just ended. So there was a lot of space in between every single person there. Like every single seat was still 6 feet apart. So that's also a reason why there weren't as many seats. And yeah, it's still like 40, 50 people is felt like a lot for me at the time. But you also got to remember, like, this is going to be shown online and people are going to continuously watch this after you have this talk. So,
yeah. Yeah. That's cool, man. So, you mentioned motivational speaking. It's kind of the next route. I mean, I know you have the screensaver of top 100 speakers. So, I got to ask you, who are some of your favorite motivational speakers? I have my own personal, but I love to hear for people that maybe you like watch or inspire you, you know, stuff like that.
I would say in high school, it was Eric Thomas. The person I always watched. Nowadays, I don't watch any motivational speakers at all. I am learning that I don't want to emulate any other speaker that is currently on the market. And the best way to do that is to not consume their content. And so it allows me to step into my own creativity and shape my own voice and the way I like to approach the market. So it's funny because when I do, let's just say, a live podcast or I speak on stage or whatever it is, people will tell me that they found me very powerful and motivational, like Eric Thomas, but without the yelling. Because, you know, he is very passionate. And, that's just his style. And it works. I've gotten a chance to meet him in person and, you know, see him speak in person. And it works for him. And for myself, I just can't see myself get on stage and just, like, going, I'm going to lose my vocal cords. I can't do all that. So I find myself being a lot more powerful in either the story that I'm telling or the way that I like to tell the story, and I had to figure that craft out for myself. That's what I would say. I don't really consume a lot of other motivational speakers. I just figure out and get feedback from people that listen to my to me speak, and use that to craft how I'm continuously growing.
No, that makes absolute sense. I really haven't really considered that because Eric Thomas is his own lane. Les Brown,
For sure. Inky Johnson.
Inky Johnson, even Tony Robbins, like these are all these big broad voice people, and you ask yourself, how can you compete with that, especially if you are that type of person? So that makes total sense, man. You're just staying in your own lane and focusing on what's best for you.
You know what? I'm gonna say this right now in the podcast. I've been saying this, but I need an actual video recording of this. I'm manifesting that by the end of next year, 2025, that Dr. Eric Thomas is going to be my mentor.
Hey,
what do you
glad, be part, glad to be part of the journey.
I'm putting it out there by the end of 2025.
That's, and I hope that happens for you, brother. Seriously,
appreciate that.
That's I think it's really cool. People set sights high, and since we were talking about manifestation, that helps me out. When did you think you got into that space? Like, when did you know that it works? A lot of people don't think manifestation works. What a power of prayer, whatever people believe in. Like, I don't think people really think it works. And I think this is a prime example of it working. So when did you get into that?
It was definitely a lot of the self-development books that you see behind me. Just reading them and seeing a lot of these highly successful people had manifestation within their daily, weekly, monthly routine, whatever it is. So understanding that, I'm like, well, obviously it must be working if all this, these people are talking about it, different industries or wherever they are. And for anyone that maybe doesn't believe in it, my first thing I always say is nothing works unless you work. So it's always going to be a matter of, let's just say, like me saying like, oh yeah, he's going to be my mentor next year. And just because I said it, that doesn't mean anything is going to happen. I actually had to put in the work after this episode is over, tomorrow, the next day, tonight, next week, next month. Like, yeah. I had to put in the work. So don't think that just because you write something down or say it, that it's going to automatically happen. You actually had to actively work for it. But the manifestation is more so a reminder for your subconscious of what you really want, and it will help guide your decisions on a weekly basis to make sure that you get there.
Man, that was good. That was good.
I can't. No. That was. Yeah. No. I see. Hey, Dr. Eric Thomas, you hear this now? Because there's a reason. There's a reason, man. Well, I have one genuine final question that I've been thinking about. Everybody that I'm going to interview soon, and I think it's all sparked because of my last one. What does it mean to be human to you?
That's a good question. I like how you do this, because it's similar to how I said at the end of my show, that as people, what is it? What is success to them? What does it mean to be human to me?
Yeah.
To explore your curiosity. And to explore your curiosity, because as humans, we have a lot of things that we may be curious about. And I think the purest form of that is we get a chance to observe children, because that's how they're able to grow and learn so much and so quickly. And everyone encourages kids to be curious, but you kind of start to lose that when you become an adult. And so that's why a lot of people may feel less human or lost in the world, because they're not leaning into that curiosity that they once had. And curiosity allows you to grow mentally, physically, spiritually, all of that. And it allows you to continuously redefine who you are as a person and what your purpose and passions are in life. So,
man,
curiosity.
Yeah.
That's my answer.
This guy's a professional for a reason. Well, brother, I appreciate you joining the show. I appreciate you taking the time out your day to sit here and talk to me, and to even use Threads as a platform, which I recently just started using again 2 weeks ago. So I think this is why it's all like so weird to me. I made a Threads last year like everybody else. It was a new wave that stopped using it. Something compelled me to start using it again 2 weeks ago, and putting out a post like that and people actually responding back. So that really means a lot, man. I've gotten a chance to meet another great, amazing individual, which I feel like is finally manifesting itself. But that's what I've been asking to do, is to meet people that are either I'm inspiring to be like, or in the same space there, man. So really, really appreciate you, man. So where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, of course. So Phenom Speaks on Instagram, Threads. I would say those two main platforms. Also, you can Google me, just Philip Phenom Robinson, Philip with two L's, Phenom, last name Robinson, like Jackie. You'll probably find a lot of information of like all my websites and YouTube and all that type of stuff. So that's always a good way. And then for my website is Phenom Speaks with an S. If you're looking to bring me into an event, podcast, anything like that. So yeah, that's how they can find me. I would definitely suggest staying tuned, because I have something that I'm launching in the next 21 days. So yeah, for sure, stay tuned.
Heard it here first, man. As always, people, if you listen to the podcast, make sure to subscribe to any favorite audio platform or check me out on YouTube. Again, Philip Phenom Robinson, I appreciate you, man. Till next time, peace. One second, brother.